Aloha and welcome to the Plus Size Globetrotter podcast, episode one. We're your hosts. My name is Lauren and...
I'm Adrienne.
And we basically are good travel buddies and friends. We're both, I guess what you would consider plus size travelers. But we're going to talk a little bit about ourselves before we get into some content. Adrienne, did you want to start?
Sure. My name is Adrienne Ipia. And when I'm not traveling, my job is to do some marketing for one of the major studios out here in Los Angeles. But my side hobby besides travel is I love a lot of geeky things, but most importantly, Harry Potter, which is where I met Lauren.
Yeah. And my name is Lauren. I live in Hawaii on the island of Maui. And I moved from Los Angeles to Hawaii about 3 years ago, just about. And I came from the entertainment industry as well, just like Adrienne. But here, my new life on Maui is travel related. I work for Expedia. I am a Expedia local expert concierge for the island. And it means I get to talk about Maui all day. It means I get to talk about travel all day. And because it's Expedia, thankfully, it means I get a lot of vacation days every year. Like Adrienne said, we met through a group that Adrienne is a... What would you say? The main head witch? The organizer?
Not a witch, but I'm the main organizer. So about 10 years ago, I, you know, really wanted other friends who were adults who loved Harry Potter just like I did. My then fiance, now husband, refused to dress in any kind of nerdy outfits with me and didn't want to go to midnight premieres and book releases. I just knew that there had to be other Harry Potter people, so I went to meetup.com and I found my tribe. 10 years later, we have over 2,400 members and an award-winning book club, and we do the well-known Harry Potter roller skating night in Los Angeles, and we're going to be in our 7th year, and it's a lot of fun.
Amazing. And that's how I found her tribe as well and made it my own as well. I met Adrienne about, I think I came in about 6 years ago, might be 7. And my first event, of course, I was quite shy, but eventually we found our way into traveling together. I would almost call us travel soulmates at this point, simply because we both have the free time, we both have the passion, and, you know, finding a travel companion can be quite difficult. Somebody who's on the same page as you. What do you think makes us ideal travel companions, Adrienne?
I definitely think for us, it's the passion to explore and a want for adventure. I mean, obviously we've got bills to pay. We have responsibilities, but, you know, from traveling, from me as a child, and I think you started in your 20s, mm-hmm. Lauren, you caught the bug right away. I grew up with the bug, and also, you know, we're very compassionate travelers. I try to understand where you're coming from, you know, where I'm coming from. We have very different styles. I'm very much an extrovert. You're an introvert, and I think mm-hmm. that also really helps.
Yeah.
And also, definitely being both plus size, mm-hmm. I'm conscious about things that might affect our travel.
Absolutely. I actually, honestly, until you said it, and it's kind of embarrassing because we're doing at this exact moment, but I never thought of the fact that us both being plus size made us traveling together ideal. I always kind of thought about it more in our sensibilities, our personalities, but that makes total sense because obviously I wouldn't be traveling with somebody who, you know, wanted to do things that I just couldn't do.
Lauren, I am a type A personality. I'm the one who plans all the travel, all the activities with my family, my friends, my everything. I'm always the planner, and because I cross all the T's, dot all the I's. But Lauren, you even take it up another step, and I don't have to worry about anything. So when I travel with you, I just sit back and see what you come up with. And there really hasn't been anything that I'm not amenable to. So thank you.
No, that's kind of what I love to do, which is why I think I currently have an ideal job, is telling people what to do and when all day, every day here on Maui, which is fabulous. Let's talk a little bit about the blog, which is how we've morphed into this podcast. When we first met, I had always talked to Adrian about a passion for writing, especially travel writing, and I always wanted to do some, and I never really could find like the perfect niche, and it wasn't until this last trip that we took together in London. We were going, we were on a bus trip out to Laycock, England, and Adrian just hit on it, like, you know, let's tell people what it's like to get on a plane and come to London. Let's tell people what it's like to get on a bus like this and head out on these tours, and what it's like walking across London, and what's the tube like. So thanks to Adrienne, she helped me find this niche, and the blog can be found. It's www.theplussizedglobetrotter.com, and it's a lot about my travels. Like Adrienne said, I started about 26, my very first international trip. I've always wanted to be a traveler, but didn't start making it happen until about that point. And since then, I've traveled a lot with friends and family. I've done a lot of solo traveling, and it's pretty much all I really, it's like some people say, I work for this, I work for that. I work to travel. That's really what my money is going to, and in my opinion, a very worthwhile thing to spend money on.
I absolutely agree, Lauren. I'm not materialistic in any way. I do like a lot of vintage inspired fashion, and that is like my other love. But no, I will pick travel over anything. And travel with that also means really, really good food. And it doesn't mean expensive food.
Adrian contributes to the Plus Size Globetrotter blog all the time in regard to what she likes to call food ventures. So getting out, exploring a city through its food. And you want to talk a little bit about how you make those plans, Adrian?
Absolutely. I mean, everything's on the internet, right? So I know I'm going to London, and I've been there a few times. I'll look at what is quintessentially London, like the more traditional foods. And then I'll look at, you know, where should I go get these foods? And there's so many different websites like Thrillist, Yelp, Eater, Time Out Magazine, and they have those in all the major metropolitan areas. And then TripAdvisor is a great place to find not only things to do and see, but things to put in your mouth.
Oh.
So it's kind of a combination of all those things. And then I kind of plan out where I'm going to see, what sightseeing I'm going to do. I'm really into architecture and history. So those are my primary. My secondary is food. And I'd make that happen. I plan it out in a grid, and it's great.
And it's absolutely how I help plan trips for Adrian and myself. I literally think, where are we going to eat? And then I find a hotel nearby, and that's where we're going to stay. So that's kind of, I'm currently planning a trip for the two of us. We're doing New York City, and then a road trip all the way up into Montreal and Quebec and back. But that's how we found where we were going to actually stay, is based on where the good foodie restaurants were. But I just kind of want to segue into what a lot of people might be wondering, which is what makes us experts in the field of plus size travel. So I'll just start by giving it to you guys. I'm a size 28. I am what I call on the blog a super fluff. And I've been traveling always as a plus size person. The smallest I've ever really gotten on a plane as was a size 18. Maybe 20 when I was 26. And so all of the traveling I've done has been done with the extra baggage that comes with being a fluffy person. So the whole point of this blog is basically to explain how you can travel at any size, as I am currently traveling as a super fluff, again, size 28 or a 5X. What makes you an expert, Adrian?
Well, definitely a plus size woman. I am currently a size 18, 20. I kind of hover between those depending on the holidays and how much I consume in like November, December. But the first time I took my real European big trip, I was a size 22, and I was a good 50 pounds heavier than I am now, maybe 47, I think, was the magic number. So I feel like I can talk about it. I grew up traveling. I was never a skinny girl. I think my happiest size is about 14, 16. So I'm fluffy. I like to travel. This is who I am.
Yeah, absolutely. So the entire point of why we're here is to give you the good, the bad, and the ugly of what it is like to get out there and travel, because I'm betting that if you've sought out this blog, if you're listening to it, you have trepidation about getting out there. Am I going to fit in that plane seat? What's it going to be like? Am I going to be able to travel in the London Underground, which is something we're going to discuss in a little bit. So it's all those weird questions that we wished somebody had answered for us, but we're considering ourselves taking one for the plus size team, and we're testing out all of these different destinations for you first and giving you the down low on what's it going to be like in reality being there, because not all of us can be as svelte and gorgeous as Rick Steves. While we both personally adore and idolize him, you know, people like Samantha Brown, this is the other side of the coin, the other side of the earth, the big fluffies at doing it just as enthusiastically and enjoying it just as much. All right, let's talk about London. So obviously Adrienne and I have traveled a lot together. Little trips like Pismo Beach, nothing major until this last year in 2017, I think in May, we met in London. And this episode is going to focus on what it's like being a plus-size globetrotter in London. And I think you'd agree, Adrienne, the best way to get started is to talk about getting to London, since I would say the majority of our podcast listeners probably don't live in London.
Absolutely. So I'm sure you can get there many ways by a boat from the United States, but I think the quickest way is going to be a plane. So why don't we talk about those plane seats?
It's probably the number one topic that anybody plus size wants information on. What's it going to be like flying as a plus size person? Because of course you'll hear a lot of, oh man, I was next to the big guy, or, you know, oh, I was next to the screaming baby. You don't want to be the screaming baby, and you don't want to be the, oh no, I was next to the ex, you know? And so this is where I have to start talking about something that a lot of plus size globetrotters don't want to hear, which is your travel is probably going to end up costing more than the travel of a standard person. And does it suck? Totally. But does it make traveling accessible and perfect? Yes. So, as I've mentioned, I am the super fluff of the two of us, and it hasn't been always like this, obviously. This is the largest that I've traveled at, and I just got to the point where I just said, you know what? I was just sick of the stress of, you know, am I going to be next to, you know, another big person? Is the person next to me going to, you know, live tweet how much they hate being next to a big person on the plane? And then the, you know, ding, 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 is, am I even going to fit? Is the seatbelt going to click? So I just started making my budgets for traveling a little bit larger. That means for a majority of my trips now, if I can, I will travel first class. And that's really only if buying two standard seats is more expensive than that first class seat. I know it sounds awful. I know it's not what you want to hear, but here's the truth of it, is they're not going to start making plane seat sizes any larger. In fact, there's a current trend of them getting even smaller, and it's just going to make the big travel stress go away. So if you can, I know not all of us, you know, have diamonds on the soles of our shoes, but I really think that you need to start budgeting that into your travels, because I think that's going to take a good 50% of your travel stress away. Now, is everybody going to have to do that? Adrienne doesn't have to do that, right?
No, not generally. I am, again, size 18, 20, if you torrid size. So I generally don't have any problems except for very, very small planes where you definitely have to ask for an extender. Mm-hmm. And I curse Ryanair. Ryanair is a commuter airline in Europe. And my very first big European trip at, you know, size 22, they were going to make me buy a second seat. They didn't offer an extender. I had to stand up, have my friend buckle the seatbelt and stuff me in so I could sit for that 2-hour flight. I'm serious. It was basically, it's like moving my belly meat into stuff in. It was, I look like, I can't eat, like a yo-yo, like when you wrap the string around the middle.
Oh, no.
And I think, I'm going to be honest, I did so much walking on that trip. I actually came back 30 pounds lighter, and I haven't gone back up since.
Nice.
So go to Europe, do a lot of walking, and you'll come back a little bit lighter.
Well, that was awesome. I'm glad you brought up the seatbelt extender, because a lot of people think, oh, it's going to be so awkward asking for that seatbelt extender. There's two things I want to say about that seatbelt extender. One, go on eBay or Amazon.com. They're like less than $20. They fit almost every airline on the planet. And boom, you don't have to ask your steward or stewardess for a extender. Number two, catch the eye of someone if you didn't want to own one. Catch the eye of one of the stewardesses as you're getting on the plane. Just give her the sweet eyebrow raise and say, mouth, seatbelt extender, and she'll very discreetly slip you one. It's not a big deal to them. This is their livelihood. They do this every day. They hand someone a seatbelt extender on the reg. I'm definitely guaranteeing you that. So sometimes you're not going to need that extra seat. Sometimes you're just going to need that seatbelt extender. But other things that I would say is if you're traveling with someone else, definitely have the fluffier of the two, either have the window or the aisle, and have the less fluffy in the middle. You can always just lean into each other, hook arms if it's a short flight. If you're traveling alone, though, and you're really, really worried, obviously do not ever book that middle seat. I mean, why would anybody consciously do that? But yeah, just do a little bit of leaning. I personally choose the window because I feel like I can lean into that there window, but I'm at the point right now where I don't want that stress. I just get the second seat or I fly first class, which I know is not in the cards for everybody in the world, but it's just one of those harsh realities, and it's what you didn't want me to say. You wanted me to say that there's a magical airline out there, but there isn't. So the best way to know if you need that extra seat is to log into seatguru.com. They'll have the width and the pitch of every seat on that plane. The width obviously being from left to right, so will your butt cheeks fit into that seat? The pitch is how much space you have for your legs, so how deep the seat's going to be, but also how much space you're going to have for your legs. So you can say, oh, you know, I'm not that tall. Pitch doesn't matter to me. But honey, if baby got back, you need pitch too, as much as you need width. So if you're going to just have to grab an old box that you got from Amazon, cut out those dimensions and see, am I going to fit comfortably? And if not, think about that extra seat. I've also talked to other people who are plus size who say, hey, I just go up to the ladies at the, or the ladies and gentlemen, at the actual gate and say, hey, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You got a seat with an empty seat next to them. As Adrian has said, I'm not necessarily type A, but I definitely like to have my ducks in a row before I travel. I don't like question marks looming in the air. So personally, me, I will spend the money so that's not a question mark. For you, you might be on the cusp of needing that extra seat. So why not try that once on a shorter flight, you know, maybe an hour or 2-hour flight somewhere and see if that works for you. But if I'm going to, say, Europe and I'm in Hawaii, we're talking hour 6 hours just to get to California, and then another 6 to get to New York City, and then another, you know, 7 across the pond, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a lot of time in a plane, so I don't mess with that stuff. Where do you like to sit on a plane, Adrian?
Okay, so I don't like to be woken up at all. So it depends. If it's going to be a really long flight, I know I don't have to pee, I'm going to do the window. So I want to be left alone and you can sleep. However, short flights where I just want to get up and run around, or maybe I just know I'm going to have to pee because it's an early morning flight, and I often take early morning flights because I have a business meeting later that afternoon, I want to do the aisle. And there's a super secret thing. Most of the aisle seats, the armrest goes up. There's a little button underneath, like all the way to the back where the hinges, where that can go up, super secret. So if you don't think you need the extra seat but would like some extra room, that's a secret. A lot of people don't know that.
This is live recording, and I want to reach through the screen here and strangle you. How did you ever tell me that? I didn't even know that was a... I'm flummoxed. I had no idea those armrests went up.
Lauren, you just had to ask me, dear.
Oh, see, this is why we're here. We are here for you. Holy macaroons, I'm learning today. So anyways, sorry, I'm a bit shocked. I had no idea. Anyways.
Not all airlines, but most. Most of the newer ones, it's not going to be a pronounced button, but feel the armrest underneath all the way down, and then you'll feel a little divot. Push in, and then it'll come up.
Interesting. Okay. That is something I'm going to have to try on my next flight, which is going to be to see you in New York. This April, May. No, May, June. Anyways, the last bit of advice I'll give you regarding those planes is never as attractive as the bulkhead seats, which is those seats in the very front row, whether it's first class or whether it's econ. Never take the bulkhead if you're a fluffy person. Yes, it's a ton of more legroom, but those seats are fixed. Like, there are no armrests. There are just three... How do I word this? The arms don't go up because they go straight down. They're like walls. The seat is a wall, basically. No matter how fluffy or not fluffy you are, if you don't fit in that wall, there's nowhere else for you to go. So you might not even fit in the seat, period. So there's nowhere to spill onto, I guess is the best way of putting it. But if you, my second bit of advice is I go into a ton of detail on this on the Plus Size Globetrotter blog, which includes, you know, seat trays and airplane bathrooms. I would say definitely visit that. It's one of the very first posts, so scroll all the way down to the bottom if you want to get into a little bit more detail. But I'd like to start talking about London, if you don't mind. What do you think, Adrian?
Yeah, let's talk about London.
Okay. So how many times have you been total?
I don't know, like 4 or 5 times.
Okay.
The very first time, I think I was there for like 5 days. It wasn't enough. And then I went back again as a stopover to go to somewhere else. And then another time for a stopover. I think I took my husband. Oh, maybe it was 4 times. And the 4th time was with you. And I enjoyed every single time. And every single time was a different experience. So, yeah, let's talk about that.
Does that include when we just happened to be in London at the exact same time and met at platform 9 3/4?
Yes, that was my very first time. That's when I was about size 22. And okay. it was very hot. But I think when we were there. That was our first time.
Okay, so that includes that trip. That was my first international destination, so I went that time. So I've only done it 3 times. But London is without a doubt one of those destinations that I don't think I'll ever be done with. Like, I've done Paris 2 times now, and I kind of am like, yeah, I've done Paris. Like, you know, if I go again, that's great. But it's not one of those cities for me personally that I can always return to. Like, I don't know. Are there other cities like London in your mind, cities that you can always, always visit?
always visit. I don't know about cities. So London, I think, or even just the United Kingdom. I've been mm-hmm. to Ireland like 3 times, Scotland 3 times. So I'd say that entire region is definitely, I will visit it as much as I can when I can. But I also love Germany a lot. And we could talk about that because you and I have both been to Germany separately. But Germany's really, really efficient country, let me yes. tell you. And it's so easy to get around. So I'm in love with Germany. Yes. And I really like the German sausages, and I mean the ones that you consume. I'm sorry.
Hey, I told them. I warned them.
You did. London is just same thing with Germany. It's so easy to get around. Their transportation system is great. Their metro, their buses. You can get an Oyster card, which is like a metro pass, which you can do it by the week, you can do it by the day, and super secret. And I know you didn't do this, Lauren, when you went this last time when I met you, is if you order your Oyster card ahead of time, there's something called like a traveler card, which is discounted for people who are coming to visit London. So like a 7-day card, I think ended up being like £43 or something. And I think for one day, I saw you spending like 14, 15 pounds for like one day.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So, you know, I think planning is a lot of fun for travel, but it's also can save you a lot of money. So please do your research.
Absolutely. I had no idea about that Oyster card, which, you know, absolutely destroys my soul considering how much research I did for this trip in general, but that's okay. That's what we're here for. We're here for each other, and we are here for our listeners. So the quintessential London trip, what would you say is the quintessential London itinerary for somebody visiting London for the first time?
Okay, so here's the things that everybody takes a picture of and that they would say they would do. They're going to see Big Ben, mm-hmm. and Big Ben is right next to, like, Westminster Abbey and the palace, Buckingham Palace, and it's all kind of right there. Mm-hmm. So the Thames is right there, too. The London Eye is, like, right there. I think that you have to do that. That is, like, your number one thing.
What, the London Eye or...
Everything, like, it's all in that same space.
Okay.
So it's like Big Ben, the palace, the church, Westminster Abbey. What's that park that we went to? Was that St. James Park that was right there too?
I think so, yeah. Other things that I would say for a first-time trip would probably be the British Museum.
Absolutely.
Harrods, without a doubt. Everyone has to get inside Harrods once in their life. The West End, if you're going to see any theater while you're out there. We're going to talk about this in a very nerdy version or a nerdy episode of the Plus Size Globetrotter, but we just went to go see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child with the original cast, which was really exciting. So that's all out at the West End. Piccadilly Circus, you know, you're going to see it at some point traveling. Trafalgar Square, of course. Tons of museums, and
the Tower of London.
That's a must do. As you can tell, Adrienne and I are both quite big Anglophiles. Basically, we love everything English, and so especially the nerdier, the better. A lot of our travels have focused on our nerdy passions. Like Harry Potter, our most recent trip also included stuff about BBC Sherlock. Oh gosh, we're both obsessed, of course, with J.K. Rowling, so we absolutely adore her new series, the Strike series, which is focused around a detective named Cormoran Strike. So we did some sights for there. But what did we do getting around London? I think we did everything. I think we did planes, trains, and automobiles.
We did.
What would you advise? So we talked about getting those Oyster cards for the London Tube. Now, talk about a little bit about the London Tube, Adrienne. Getting in and out of the tube stations for a plus-size person. Always easy, sometimes easy. What is your advice?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about the Oyster card. So the Oyster cards are going to work for the Metro, and it's going to work for those double-decker red buses. They're really awesome. So it's kind of like if it's a public transportation, you can get on it with this Oyster card. So the Metro is easy. It is easy to get in and out of if it's a major Metro station. So like the King's Cross station, any major station. So what I advise you do is there's an app where you can go online, you can get a subway map, and then you can see the subway stations that have handicap access. Otherwise, because it's a very old city, it's a lot of stairs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you do have problems going up and down stairs, you may want to be very strategic on which Metro stations you use that don't have, like, an elevator, because it could sometimes be, like, 3-4 flights of stairs up. And you may want to opt to do the buses, the above-ground buses. So that's something you want to think about. If you have a short amount of time to be in London and you want to hit all the major points of interest, I would highly suggest, and I would suggest this for any area as long as you do some research first, is the hop-on, hop-off buses. Mm-hmm. It will take you to all the major areas, all the major, you know, travel sites, and it'll do it so efficiently. While you're on the bus, you're going to hear commentary, and it's usually multiple languages. You pick the language that you need, and it'll tell you history about the upcoming location that you're going to arrive at. And depending on the city and country, it could run every 20 minutes to every hour. And for me, who I take a lot of weekend trips, if like I have like a long weekend, I'll, you know, I just came back from Osaka a couple of weeks ago, and I went for like 5 days. So I just want to like efficiently hit all the things, do what I need to do, dip in and dip out. So I highly suggest hop on, hop off buses as well.
I would agree 100% for a very short period of time in a major area, a hop on, hop off bus is a lifesaver. They're usually pretty inexpensive, between, I'd say, $15 to $40 for an all-day ticket. Sometimes you can buy multiple-day passes as well. That is perfect for a first-time visit. And then it's kind of like a cruise ship, in my opinion. For me, I think cruise ships are best for hitting highlights. And then you have gotten a vibe of each of those areas. Now that you've gotten the vibe, you know where you want to go and visit for a longer period of time. So you hit those hop-on, hop-off bus spots, and you say, you know what? I want to sit in front of Buckingham Palace now, and I want to watch the changing of the guards. Or I want to go to Harrods, and I want to spend, you know, my entire month's paycheck on everything, on every level. And, you know, that's to me a perfect example of what the hop-on, hop-off buses are. And hop-on, hop-off buses are very easy in and out. Typically, because people are getting in and out so often, you can find yourself a solo seat, or if you're traveling with someone else, they're not the roomiest, you know, but they're typical of any kind of bus. So, again, I would definitely recommend those for first-time visitors. The tube stations, I'm so glad you touched upon the fact that not all of them are going to have elevators. Now, I still am okay with doing the stairs. The only thing is I like to take my time because, I don't know, I'm the tortoise. I'm not the hare. And the problem with a city like London is everyone in London is a hare. Those people walk so incredibly fast. I find that in a lot of European cities. It's like, move over, I got places to go, people to do, you know, things to see, things to know. And I think my first trip to London, I found myself practically trying to keep up with them. But you don't have to keep up with them, but be cognizant of the people in the cities that you're a tourist in. They're getting to work, you know, and so if you're moving super, super slow, you know, maybe step aside. So there's always a lane for the slower movers. So just be very aware of all of those things is something I would like to mention. But if you need those elevators, definitely know the tube stops that have them. Now, something that I've also done with very short periods of time, especially in the city of London, is I will splurge every once in a while on a private tour of something. Like, if there's a lot of sites I want to see and not a lot of time and doing it on my own is impractical, you would be surprised. In a city like London, you can do a private black cab tour for a pretty darn reasonable price. I mean, I mentioned, or you guys know by now, I work in hotels here in Maui. I literally just yesterday had a woman spend $400 to sit in a cabana for a few hours because, like, it was the thing you do in Maui. You sit in a cabana next to the pool in the ocean. And I was like, you know, Adrian and I did a private tour of London that lasted like 2.5-3 hours, and it was less than that. It was about half that. So things you might not think are affordable can definitely be affordable. What other things did we do getting around? So we've talked planes, trains. Let's talk a little bit more about walking this great city and walking cities in general, but specifically London.
I mean, again, everybody walks in London. You're right. Everybody has a faster pace. I'm actually a very slow walker. My friends and my husband have to wait for me, and I'm like, look, it's just my pace. Don't judge me. So, I mean, yeah, you just, you know, you go off to the side. If people want to pass you, you're good. I'm fine taking in the sights. If you are, you know, if you are hesitant to do too much walking, you can do the cabs. And I haven't tried doing Lyft or Uber in London, but maybe that's something you might want to consider as well if it's a location that may be off the beaten track. But I use it a lot here in Los Angeles and when I'm traveling as well. So, you know, there's ways to get around. But also with regards to your mobility, you want to look at hotels too, because a lot of these hotels are really, really old and they may be up a really long flight of stairs.
Yep.
So just be cognizant of that. It's not like United States where, you know, I think it's mandated that things be ADA compliant. It is not that anywhere else in the world.
No, absolutely not. And consider the fact that you're possibly going to have a two-story walk-up in a hotel, which might be okay, but think about that day that you're checking in, you've been on a long flight, and ding, 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 you have a 50-pound suitcase that you're now also dragging up two flights of stairs. So definitely a big warning is look for things with elevator/lifts. Now, I touched upon briefly the fact that Adrian and I did sit in for Harry Potter and the Cursed Child on the West End. And that's one more thing I do want to bring up about London. Adrian has talked about London being an incredibly old city. And what people don't realize is it's not just the fact that, you know, people are bigger these days, you know, fat-wise. People are just bigger these days. We're much taller than the people of, you know, even just 100 years ago. And so things like theaters are going to have seats for the original people they were built for. People who, you know, maxed out at maybe 5'5", 5'6". So there's going to be hiccups everywhere. London is an amazing city. You're going to be okay. As the super fluff, what you just got to do is take your time, allow extra time for everything that you're doing. Almost everywhere in London, you will find a bench somewhere to take five on. That hop on, hop off bus, you know, sometimes you just do the whole loop just to get, you know, a little R&R in. It's all definitely doable. We're going to have on the Plus Size Globetrotter website, there's a PSG rating for very specific locations, but things like Buckingham Palace, you know, easy peasy. You're just standing out and enjoying the views. Something like Tower of London, though, you're doing a lot more walking. You, at some point, will probably want to do a tour with one of their, what are they called, beef eaters, Adrian? What are those guys called?
Yes, with big hats.
Yeah. So not a ton of walking to be done with that one, and a lot of places to take in a little bit of rest. Same with the British Museum, Trafalgar Square, Westminster Abbey even, lots of church pews. Really, if you take your time, you understand that, yes, I'm not a standard-sized person. I might take up a few extra inches on the London Underground. It's going to be okay. So as far as London, Adrian, what have we missed?
We haven't talked about the food, and you know that's important to me.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
But before we talk about the food, you brought up PSG ratings, but I don't think our listeners know what PSG ratings are. That's, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that's found on the blog. It's something I started pretty early on in. A PSG rating is a plus-size Globetrotter rating, and it's on a scale of 1 to 10. And you'll find it very easily on the blog. Zero being you can be wheelchair bound and do this activity no problem. 1, 2, and 3 is more about like bus tours, lots of resting, sitting in general. Once you get into the 2, 3s, and 4s, it's all about being able to climb a few flights of stairs. Getting into that 5 is being able to stand up for a couple of hours without any resting. And then maybe 2 hours of walking at a slow pace. And then as you get even higher, it's much more mobile fluffies. So fluffies who are more like Adrian, able to be on their feet for a much longer period of time. Somebody who's going to do something like zip lining, someone who's going to do a kayaking tour in a destination. So those are in much greater detail on the website.
I'm excited that you created that, Lauren. That's great. So do we want to talk about food? I think yes. Yes. So I'm not going to tell you exactly where to go. I want you to feel free to do your own research. But a lot of the iconic foods from London, I would say, would be like the fish and chips, the Cornish pasties, which you can find in the train stations. They're walkable, like walkable fried pies. You can't go wrong. Or baked pies. What else? They have a lot of great Indian food. There's a lot of areas of Little Indias. And I think this last time we stayed in one, and I think I had curry every night, and it was absolutely incredible. So I have a thing of trying potato chips in every single country and city I go to. And I love the cheese and onion Walker's chips in London. They're fantastic. You should try them all. What other flavors did we try? Did we try like lobster chips? We had some really weird ones, right?
We did. We had like a shrimp cocktail, a Worcestershire sauce, or they really like their crisps over there. And they are a lot of really amazing, bizarre flavors that actually always work. I am a teensy, insy, bincy percentage of the foodie that Adrian is. So when I go to London, the weird thing that I look for is those sandwiches that they put in those little ripped plastics. So you get a whole sandwich cut on the diagonal, and there's like 100,000 flavors of them. But the first time I went to London, I found one that had turkey and stuffing, and I just have never had a better like walk around town sandwich in my whole life. But what most people don't realize is how much better chocolate is in Europe. So Kit Kat for me is like my candy of choice. So I can't even eat an American Kit Kat anymore. So when I go, especially to like London, it's like, get me that Kit Kat. I got to get that real chocolate in me. And both Adrian and myself, we are like the champions of the sparkling water. And thankfully, a city like London has embraced that. And you can find sparkling water basically every 5 feet. There's going to be a vendor saying, hey, would you like a sparkling water? But what were some of your favorite meals in your travels in London?
Okay, so on Sundays, the British used to be called Sunday roast in a lot of the pubs and the restaurants. So roasted meats, it's not really my jam, but I appreciate the thought and sentiment it goes into. There's like smashed peas and onion gravy and Yorkshire pudding, which is like this puffy bready thing that they put gravy on. It is amazing. It seems so British. gosh, I can't even think. What else did we eat there? I mean, I really am a big fan of, like, snacky food. So whenever I see, like, a street merchant, there's a lot of Middle Eastern foods, like kebabs, kebab shops. I love kebab shops, and they're everywhere, and it's so inexpensive. You know, here's the key. If you see locals standing in line to eat something, go get that thing, because if they're standing in line for it, it's got to be good.
Absolutely.
That's my secret.
Absolutely. Okay. What do you think?
Oh, one more thing about London. Okay. You need to pay to go to the bathroom. Ooh. It is not free. You better have change on you all the time. First time I got there, really had to go to the bathroom, did not have change. Someone had pity on me and let me in. So carry coinage on you all the time to use the water closet, and that's what it's called there.
The WC. Absolutely. And that actually goes for a majority of the European cities I've been in. There's always a charge for the WC. Even, I mean, in Germany, at rest stops to get gas, I've had to pay for the restroom. But keeping in mind, if you spend money at the gas station in a lot of these places, or if you spend money at the place where they're asking for money, like McDonald's, if you go in there and you buy a Coke or a cup of coffee or something, you can actually get your money you paid for the water closet back. So that's another big helpful hint, is if you spend money in the establishment in which you're using their restroom, they will give you that money back. So that's always nice to know. But that's a very big point, is bathrooms ain't free over there.
And just because I come from California, I'm used to toilet seat covers. Now, not all states use this, and I travel quite a bit again for work and personal. So I tend to hoard toilet seat covers because I can stand and pee. We all done it as women. Men, it's super easy. But when you have to go the number twos, you definitely want to sit down and, you know, you can do the paper and like spread it all out, but sometimes you don't want to even deal with that. Walk around with disinfectant wipes and toilet seat covers, and you're going to have to bring them from America.
True dat. Well, yeah. I think it's been an amazing first episode. I hope that you've definitely learned something, not just about traveling as a plus-size person, but London in general. And I hope you tune into episode 2. We're in the process of organizing all of our different episodes, but check out the plussizeglobetrotter.com website, and we're also on Facebook just via the Plus Size Globetrotter, as well as on Instagram. It's, again, also the Plus Size Globetrotter. And Adrian, any last thoughts for today?
And we'd love to share your travel and vacation photos. So if you want to tag us on Instagram, that's great. Mm-hmm. You could find me on Traveling Adrian on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big user of Instagram, but I will be from now on. I feel the need to journal my travel, and I shall. So if you want to follow me, please do.
Absolutely. And you take really great Instagram pictures, by the way, so I would definitely recommend checking it out. And she is on the road constantly, so the best way to see what it's like being a pretty constant traveler. Well, thank you, Adrian, for being a big part of this, my food venturer and my traveling soulmate and co-host on the Plus Size Globetrotter podcast. Aloha, everyone.
Aloha.
Music by J.Y.